Wonderful. Thank you so much. Hi, everyone. Welcome to LH1 Live, November 2025 edition. Pretty crazy. Anybody else feel like this year has flown by? It's literally gone from summer to, I think we had one day of fall here in Denver, and we have 8 inches of snow today. So we went from one to the other. So just wanted to kind of throw out some quick housekeeping reminders. If you're in a busy area, please mute yourself. It's much easier for you to mute yourself versus us to mute you, and then it's harder for you to come back off mute. So I hear some background noise. So if you're shuffling around, please make sure you're on mute. That'd be wonderful, especially as we kind of kick off into the call. That'd be great. Thank you so much. Other kind of quick housekeeping things. As you know, LH1 Live, we are this call is all about whatever is best for you. So I hope you brought questions or anything else like that that we can kind of help guide and be able to best support. I would say this call has kind of gone in some really fun variations. And lately we've had some guest co-hosts with me, which I've had a blast with. And this month we're going to change it up yet again, and I'm really excited. We have a guest speaker who I know you guys are going to love. He's here to tell us our story or his story, and his LH1 journey. And we as a community are here to celebrate him because he has a lot of cool accomplishments for him to share with us. And so I'm pretty excited for you guys to get to know him better. Towards the end of the call, I will start talking about the other LH1 calls that we'll have for the rest of November. We've got some really fun stuff ahead, including some new calls. So definitely stay tuned for that post after our conversation. How we'll kind of run with this one is that we'll have Evan join us and kind of be able to tell us his story. I'll kind of hold on the questions while he's kind of sharing that, and then we'll open it up once he's done sharing. We'll open it up for conversation and questions from there. So please, I promise it's way better if you jump in or if you ask questions once he shared a story. We love it for it to be interactive. So please make sure you're saving those questions for once he shares his stories, because that's always best. We will have a session or time after the 1 hour mark where we do turn the recording off. If you do have questions that you prefer not to be recorded, we will have a time for that too. So definitely hang out, stay around. We'd love to kind of be able to either answer your questions, best support, or even if you have a good story to vent about, we totally get it here. So that's all perfect. All right, so I think that's a little bit about housekeeping with LH1 Live. We do have another fantastic call from next month, so don't leave. It's just getting good and good. So, but without further ado, I can't wait to introduce to you Evan. I've gotten the opportunity to chat with him here and there in the past couple of months, but finally, I actually just got a chance to talk to him for the first time today. And both of our dogs were crying that they needed to go for a walk, so I felt like I'm very excited to continue the conversation and for all of you to get to know him. So, Evan, thank you so much for being here. Really excited to have you join our LH1 community. Tell your LH1 story, and so we can kind of hear all about it. So, I'll pass it over to you.
All right, sounds good. Let's do it. So hello everyone. My name is Evan Charles Swarbrock. I currently live in South Carolina, but I'm originally from Illinois. And I feel like I've been bopping around all over the place the last couple of years. So those crazy places will probably come up in the story. But basically growing up, I was a tiny little nerdy kid, basically looked exactly like Harry Potter, just a different hair color, and was very academic, but not so good with the physical end of things. And I decided to kind of challenge myself because school was a little bit easy with my upbringing and how we were pushed academically. I wanted to be able to push myself physically as well, and kind of got into reading muscle magazines and all that fun stuff. And then wound up going to undergrad and getting my bachelor's in health science. After I graduated, I was kind of having a gap year where I was working some different jobs in the fitness industry. And then all of a sudden, started having some eye issues. And I thought it was the fact that I wore my contacts too much. But it wound up being Leber's. I kind of found out through a fun little volleyball game back home in tiny Kewaunee, Illinois. And there, it wasn't the most competitive league. And I was doing really well 1 week and kind of brought in as a ringer. Then the next week, it's like the lights were really bothering me in the gymnasium we were playing in. And I was like, what in the heck is going on? This is weird. And then I got hit in the face with a spike, which did not happen. And I played a lot in college because my friends kept pushing me to do that. And that's kind of what we did for fun together, played in different competitive leagues in a bigger area. So I was like, something's weird here. And then later that game, I threw up the ball to serve it, and it just disappeared in the lights. And I was like, "Oh no!" So I kind of just swung and tried to get my timing right, and the ball landed 8 feet in front of me instead of on the other side of the net. And needless to say, I didn't get invited back to play for that team anymore. And I totally get it. But wound up then having a kind of a death truck ride in the fog, where I was doing like 30 on the highway, getting passed by semis, had my hazards on my truck, and it was just like, I don't know what's going on here. And I just thank goodness got home. Actually, the country roads where I lived, they didn't have lines on them. So I was literally driving by feel based off how much gravel I could feel underneath the tires on the right. So the next morning after that fun little ride, I was in the eye doctor's and we couldn't figure out what was going on from the front of my eyes. Nothing was correctable up front. I was still visually impaired. And then I was like, well, there's this disease that my uncle has and maybe could run in my family. We have no earthly idea. And it affects the optic nerve. So doc goes in the back and he's like, okay, we're gonna, I did some reading real quick on that disease. We're gonna check out your optic nerve, take a little picture. This was like a gruff former army doctor and fantastic mustache, very grim demeanor most of the time. And then he came back with that picture of how messed up my optic nerve was, almost crying. And I was like, we figured it out. All right, it's gotta be Leber's. So wound up just going from there, gave myself a couple of days to kind of regroup and mope. And then it was off for the races, trying to adapt everything. Picked my way through a lot of aspects of adapting and learning how to still operate at the different jobs that I had. Had to be driven everywhere, obviously. And then I've been applying to graduate schools around the country. And then obviously that was going to be very difficult in like South Dakota and things like that, areas I was unfamiliar with, not being able to drive anymore, not knowing anybody there, everything like that. My sister was going to school in Chicago, so I quit applying anywhere else. Only applied to University of Illinois Chicago. Luckily got in to my master's program there. And we were off to the races. And then Jessica and I were actually talking about this earlier, is I refused to use a cane to that point. And there's all kinds of fun little sidewalks and all kinds of tripping hazards in Chicago, where people's stairs are built out way into the sidewalk for some great reason all the time. So I was almost tripping on stuff and doing face plants and everything, and eventually got to the point where I almost broke my nose again. My sister, who was walking with me, is like, hey, we're gonna get you a cane. And I was like, nah, I'm really not ready for that step yet. She goes, the Chicago Lighthouse for the Blind is 2 blocks away from us. We are walking there right now and we are getting a cane. And luckily I broke, because they absolutely changed everything for me, was able to help me not live in denial nearly as much and kind of be a good indicator to other people. It obviously didn't necessarily change everyone's mind. I had a professor who very first week didn't understand really how to adapt things. And I hadn't learned how to learn. I used to be a visual learner, but I hadn't totally learned how to learn yet. So I wasn't very good for advocating for myself and knowing exactly what I needed. I was kind of muddling through and really trying hard to not freak out, but figure it out. And she sat me down and basically tried to talk me out of going to school there and basically saying I need to quit and I belong at a different school. So there was still the tough times and the hardships and everything, but wound up having a better GPA in my master's program than I did in undergrad, and finished my master's in kinesiology with a concentration in applied exercise physiology. I realized I am not a big city person, never was, and I was just in London. I'm still not a big city person. So I moved to a smaller city where I actually went to undergrad and was living in an apartment with my brother. So again, being able to luckily lean on that support system. And then I started trying to find jobs, wound up working as a personal trainer and then a professor at a local college, and then also as a rehabilitative exercise specialist. When I was a professor, I was teaching future trainers to be trainers, basically. And then wound up getting a bunch of other different certifications, being a strength coach. And then let's see, it was in 2017, I started competing in Strongman, if anyone is familiar. It's where you have to like lift the logs and pull trucks and lift stones and all that crazy stuff. So for some odd reason, I felt compelled to do that. Did my first one in the rain in a parking lot in Morton, Illinois.
Okay, for
And
now, thanks, though.
what was that?
I
Oh,
think it
no.
was someone who didn't know they needed to be muted, but they are now.
Oh, okay. All right. Then I was kind of off to the races and really loved Strongman from there. Since 2017, then I've qualified for nationals like 7 times or something like that in I think 4 different weight categories. One of my prouder achievements is I won Illinois Strongest Man against able-bodied people, won every event. Back in 2019, I won some other competitions, everything. And then actually just had a couple of big ones recently that I'll talk about here in a second. But also back in July of 2020, you know, we were all kind of bored and sitting around for some odd reason for a lot of 2020. So I decided to start a business while I was, you know, just sitting stuck in an apartment on my own at that point, and started writing a bunch of articles. And my brother and I started Cane and Able Fitness, which is spelled C-A-N-E and A-B-L-E Fitness. So you use a cane, but you're still able to do stuff. And it is a fitness resource for the blind and visually impaired. So through that work, I've gotten to work with different organizations and people from all over the world in order to speak at conferences, do remote coaching, share articles and resources, create different online programs, and all kinds of other stuff in order to make sure that us people with visual impairments are able to still exercise, be healthy, have better access to gyms, all kinds of stuff like that. So it's led to a lot of really cool work and helping a lot of blind people to be able to be healthier, happier, and then hopefully live some more enriching lives outside of the gym as well. And then been doing that for a while now. Had some different stints with like moving up to Alaska. Me and Jessica got more into the weeds about that. But I was a strength coach for the Army there for 4 months until I was allegedly, wrongfully terminated, due to my disability, which was an issue with them from the get-go, or at least the contractor, and, still going through all that fun investigation stuff.
How was this life?
Yeah, there's certainly fun obstacles that have been, there along the road. But it's all led to this point where, I got to meet my lovely wife up there in Alaska, gotten to bop around the country a little bit, and now we're in South Carolina. And then in the last month, it's been some fun stuff. I started competing in Adaptive Strongman, which is basically strongman for people with different disabilities. I won America's Strongest Athlete with Disabilities at about a month ago now. And then yesterday we just got home from England where I was competing at the World Championships. And against all the standing class disabled people, I managed to get 2nd place. So, if anybody's able to see, I'll hold up the trophy here. My wife says she should bring it up here. So it's basically a big Viking head. And it's indicative. It's a Viking because, the guy that sponsors the competition is the 4-time World Strongest Man, Magnus Vermagnussen. A lot of people know him. So yeah, we really have a good competition. If anybody knows Atlas Stones, was able to set a world record in that. And that catches you up all the way till yesterday.
So many good things. I was like, so many great things. Wait, so walk us through, you know, going from weightlifting and being in sports and fitness to college to like Strongest Man. I feel like there was so much in between there. Like, did you have like mentors? Did you, was there a gym that you went, like, how do you train to lift a car?
You just have to believe. With all my training background, I've been my own coach the whole time. But it's been a lot of fun training crews and stuff. So I kind of known as the guy who was just always in the gym and not in the library, in undergrad. And then it was basically the same thing in graduate school. I liked learning hands-on. So when I developed Libres, I was working out of multiple different gyms. So I kind of just kept lifting and kept adapting and learning a lot of different tips and tricks on the fly that helped me to still succeed, to the point where there's like people in my small town saying, your family is a bunch of liars, your brother isn't blind, and you know, he still is at the gym and everything, and blind people can't do that. So it was a matter of just keeping the momentum that I had from being obsessed with exercise, putting things into practice. And then when it came to strongman, yeah, it is a lot of, how am I going to do that? I don't have a semi truck that I get to pull. So it's learning to, take just the core principles of how you need to be strong and then be able to transfer it over. So, let's try to think of a good example here. So, yeah, to deadlift a car, that actually is a perfect example. There's like this RDL machine that is kind of on a fixed point that people usually use to like build better glutes. And we have that at our little bodybuilding gym that we go to. So we use that because it actually mimics you having to go up and back. But then also for being able to build that up, that just outright strength. It's been a lot of trap bar deadlifts over the last, that's like 16 weeks, because my last two competitions I've had to do carb deadlifts. So, yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay. Oh, just a heads up, whoever's using, I think it sounds like JAWS. Whoever's using JAWS, we can hear that. Just want to give you a heads up. Okay, cool. Okay, so, I mean, you kind of totally, I think you brush over this story when your sister was like, we're totally getting to Kane, let's go. Was it really that easy? I mean, I'll definitely speak for myself that, like, from the time that I understood I should use a cane to the time I actually started using a cane, like, it was a big gap. Like, what kind of empowered you to take that leap?
It was mostly desperation, if we're being honest. So, it was a matter of having to in order to survive. There's a lot of indicators of you need to hurry up and figure this junk out or you will not make it when I just up and moved to Chicago, which is in a lot of ways because I just jumped in the deep end and said I will swim, I won't sink, and this is how it is. But I was also kind of forgotten by the blind service system there for a bit. Like, I didn't get any O&M training or even know that O&M existed until towards the end of my second year in grad school. So it was a good 18 months of nothing and just figuring out my cane technique. My first O&M, she was actually like, so why do you do things this way? I was like, I'm not classically trained. I just got a cane one day and started trying to figure out how to use it to help me. So being able to brush up my technique and improve those things was super helpful. But it was definitely a process and learning to, you know, not forget your cane on the way out of the door and like a bunch of those little nuances to keeping it around and understanding how to use it for curbs and all that fun stuff. But like with most things, I just jumped in the deep end and saw what happened.
I love that. And that sounds like maybe the same thing that you did when you got your master's, because you mentioned you didn't know how to advocate for yourself. How did you learn that? Like, how'd you navigate that?
So I wasn't really familiar with like what all the Disability Resource Center could help with. I knew that they were a resource for me, but it wasn't made entirely clear like what I could get help with. So we had some of the different ways that I could get help established before the semester, but I wasn't very good at advocating for myself or going, hey, like this style of tests or whatever just does not work for me and it can't work for me. Or like these spreadsheets. I didn't know how to use Zoom text yet. I didn't even know Zoom text was a thing for like my first semester. So I was just doing it, trying to zoom in on my smartphone and do Google Sheets and everything like that. So again, out of desperation, it was, they have me taking a test at the resource center. So I, you know, can't be on my own computer and cheat or anything. But they have me doing that on Zoom text. Oh, I should figure out what Zoom text is and how to use it better. And so it was just becoming more aware, asking more questions, and then figuring out how to use those tools a lot better. And then we were able to be off of the races, no problem whatsoever at that point.
Oh my gosh, it sounds like a whole lot of grit, that's for sure. Okay, so then you like self-taught with a cane, self-taught with Zoom text, and now you're like, not only are you doing all of this with Strongest Man and Cane Enabled and having the resources, then you also public speak, right?
Yeah. So I'm blessed to be able to talk to a lot of different groups. So I've spoken at International AER, Northeast AER, Illinois AER, a bunch of different blind centers.
What's AER?
What's it stand for? It's like the Association for, I always forget, like the Education and Rehabilitation of Blind
Vision. Ooh, yep. There we go.
So that has helped a lot. I've gotten to be a part of Camp Abilities up in New York. I'm probably going to be on the board now for Camp Abilities World, so helping establish blind sports camps for children around the world. Yeah, just getting to do different public speaking at different blind organizations, whoever brings me in order to talk about why fitness is so important for us as visually impaired people, and then also expose people to how to make things more accessible. And I have a lot of tips and tricks that always get a good, you know, little pop out of the crowd, because it doesn't have to be that hard. We can just do some very simple things and cue ourselves in some different ways. And then, you know, even with a visual impairment, as I'm a living testament, I'm nothing special, but just with some little tweaks, you're able to absolutely thrive.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, wait, you just read my mind. It's like we practice this. Can you talk about some, yeah, like what are, you've been diagnosed for 10 years, definitely seasoned in a lot of different things. So what are your tips and tricks? Like if there was someone newly diagnosed that just joined our call, what would you say? What would you say to them?
I would say don't overly complicate things. I've had several people who they come to me for remote training, they're like, oh my gosh, this is so much better programming for me. My old trainer used to have me doing like these supersets where I would do one thing and then I have to go to a different machine like 30 yards across the gym, and I'd have to be tripping over people's bags and this and that. I was like, yeah, why would you do that? Like, why would you make getting to a different part of the gym the really hard part? Like, why don't you just do one thing really well and then move on to that next thing and do that really well? And there's a lot of different techniques to be able to do that. Think like bodybuilding, like rest pause or drop sets or these different intensity techniques that make you work hard in one place, doing one thing really well and then move on. That'd be great. As opposed to doing a circuit of 10 different things and you can't tell if somebody took your machine yet and until you get back to it and all that stuff. Like, just simplifying how you're approaching the gym works really well. And then there's some different things. I've had different people with visual impairments talk about like, oh, I really want to know what number is on the machine, and like they need to be labeled in Braille or like really high contrast, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, on the, if you guys are familiar with the pin selectorized machines where you take the pin, you put it in a different hole, and then it keeps a certain amount of weight on the machine. I'm like, that doesn't really matter. Like, the fixation is going to be different. The type of machine is going to be different, blah, blah, blah. Like 40 pounds on one lat pull down machine is very different than 40 pounds labeled on a different lat pull down machine. So it doesn't really matter. It matters the stimulus that you need. Like, if you need a hard 10 reps, that's going to be different on different machines. But if you're consistently using the same machine, that's where you get to not focus on, oh, how much weight is it? Because that doesn't really matter. Again, it's on a cable. There's different friction, blah, blah. Instead, it's like, oh, I put in a whole four and then I was able to do a hard 10 reps. And then next time, if I put in a whole four, then if I'm able to do 12 reps, I know I got better. So it's really about simplifying that, not worrying about, oh, exactly how much weight is it? It's just like, be consistent and find a slightly different way of thinking about it. And that's going to simplify things like crazy. So I have all my different spreadsheets of my exercises and everything, and it's not labeled the way a sighted person would label it. I say whole four, X 10, next time aim for 12, things like that. Because I don't need to know if it's 40 pounds. I don't need to know if each plate is 20 pounds, therefore it's 80 pounds. It doesn't matter. I know I put in a whole four, and when I think about it and I count the holes and then put the pin in the fourth one, that I'm doing the consistent thing. So just kind of slightly changing how you think about programming and then how you think about loading and everything like that can be super helpful. Another one is being able to think about cues differently or learning exercises differently. So obviously when people who are sighted want to know what an exercise is or assess their own form, so when they want to know what a new exercise is, they're going to go on YouTube and look for a video of it. Kind of hard for us with visual impairments. I always, joke that the shirtless, steroided up guy with fancy hair and everything isn't very good at audio description necessarily all the time. That's not exactly their demographic that they're preaching to. So you need to make sure that you learn an exercise in a way that makes sense to you, with better audible cues. And then when you're putting it into practice, again, we can't be like most people where we're able to turn sideways and look in the mirror or anything like that. Instead, we have to be able to search for the right sensation. So I have a system where we go from these extrinsic tactile cues of like an outside force pushing in on you or trying to manipulate you in order to make you feel something, and then turning that into an intrinsic cue of like feeling where your knees are properly on a squat. And then turning that into an audible cue if someone is going to be coaching you, telling you like push your knees out on a squat. So I kind of walk people through that system during my talks and how to think about that when it comes to different movements. And those are some of the base principles that I go with as well. So again, I could talk all day. I have like hours where I speak to different organizations about all that stuff, but I'll cut myself off on that one for now.
No, that's awesome. I was first gonna say, like, what if we all liked looking at the cute guy on the YouTube video? Just throwing it out there. Just saying.
You can do that in your free time. Absolutely. I mean,
fair, fair. But you said something that, like, I felt like reins into everything that we with LH1 have is like, you just have to do something differently. And it's a matter of like setting different goals and expectations. And like, I love that you said like four hole or whatever it is, because you're right. Like at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what we're doing. It's just like, one, did we improve? And two, how does that feel? And no matter what that is, and if it's different, you know, like it that's progress. And so that's awesome. That's such a good perspective.
Yeah, to back off of that, I was doing a talk for a group of mostly older visually impaired people lately. There's one lady who is like, I really, really want to do the aerobics class at the gym, but I am terrified. I was like, well, how many times have you done it? She's like, oh, none. I was like, well, you can go to the instructor and talk to and like kind of have that back and forth. And usually, I've heard this so many times. They're like, I talked to the instructor and then we figured out what routine was going to work or how I could learn the routine early, or she told me what each direction is going to kind of mean, so I knew what was happening immediately. And I told the lady, I was like, why don't you try it? Like, have good conversations back and forth. You know, take 2 minute conversation before class, 2 minute conversation after class. Try it 3 times. I bet it will be completely different after you've done 3 classes. And then, you know, this isn't for me. But I got to try it. And then more than likely, it's going to be beyond better. It's like going to your first day of school. You know, you go to your first day of kindergarten and you are just beyond terrified. You're like, I have no clue what to expect here. But, you know, you're through your first week of kindergarten and all of a sudden you have 5 new best friends. You cry when you leave your teacher. Like, you're just in such a better place because you just love it so much. So I think it's going to be the same thing with a lot of people in exercise. It's just like, maybe you'll get sore the first time. Maybe you'll learn a lesson the hard way a little bit. With just like, oh, I put the dumbbell back in the wrong place or whatever. But, a few different exposures and it's completely different game for you.
Okay. One of my last questions, then we'll definitely open it up. But like, how are you? You're so positive. You've got such an upbeat vibe to you. Is this all the endorphins? Like, should we all just start lifting like later today? Like, cause you are, I'm like pumped. How, where did you get your grit?
Well, I grew up on a farm, basically at a horse hospital across the driveway. So, and I'm the oldest, so I had to do a lot of manual labor and everything. And it was even like, okay, you like the week I went blind, I was still cleaning horse stalls, like before and after. Like it's just part of it. And then I don't know. I guess I'm not always positive. I have my fun little soapboxes where I'm just joking and ranting. About, you know, people being silly at the gym and stuff like that. But in the end, like we're incredibly blessed. And the way that I see things is like, it could be way worse. And I love the gym so much because it's a chance to practice overcoming adversity. And I really want to share that with other people. So that's what I get to do with my life now, is be able to share that purpose. And like our lives are so easy that we have to construct these places with a bunch of metal in order to like lift it and then make things harder for us. So I'm not scooping horse manure all the time anymore. Instead, I get to like try to deadlift heavy weights and things like that. So that's pretty cool. And then if you practice overcoming adversity in the gym so much, it just becomes a habit and you're able to transfer that over. So I've seen that time and time again in the blind community where people are able to start exercising, understanding just how capable they are and how they're able to just follow a plan, work hard at it, and then all of a sudden you can do something even bigger and better. And I think that premise really transfers over to the rest of life. So I want that for the rest of the blind community. I don't want us to be relegated to the sidelines, because I've had that, you know, people trying to do that to me constantly, and it's probably never going to stop. But as long as you know how capable you are and can advocate for yourself and really push the envelope, I don't need people competing. I just need people to be healthier and happier in order to accomplish what they want. So, my wife and I were just over in England, getting to do, you know, well over 10,000 steps and go on a river cruise on the River Thames in Oxford and walk around and see these like cool historic sites and be in these old dusty bookshops, and which are very good for blind people because you can like smell how old everything is. But like, I wouldn't be able to do that stuff if I wasn't in decent shape. So it's really important to me. I mean, the whole adventure was spawned by me lifting heavy things, which is kind of silly, especially considering how small and frail of a little nerd that I was. So I'm kind of like the last person anyone would have expected growing up to be doing what I'm doing, but it's just because of that consistent effort. So I just want those rewards to like other people to be able to garner those as well.
Heck yeah, we're not made for the sidelines. We are definitely made to get out there and do stuff. I love that. Evan and I were talking about weightlifting. I've recently gotten into it and it's so fun because like the tiny improvements, it's one more rep or like 3 more pounds or whatever it is, like just to have those small wins really do snowball into big wins. And so it's so so fun to kind of set yourself up for like little challenges each time you go to the gym or add another day or whatever it is to kind of have those little benchmarks. It's really fun. So yeah, I totally agree.
Oh, and I didn't even include this part. Actually, because it was before I was vision impaired, but it was like seventh or eighth grade. I think it was eighth grade. The football coaches had us come into the weight room because they wanted to teach us how to do some of the different lifts and everything before we were in high school and be able to like get us ready to hit the road running. I wasn't in football. I was too small to play football, so it wasn't really allowed, and I didn't really want to get creamed all the time. So, but one of the lifts, I was just trying to get stronger for basketball, which is kind of sad. One of the lifts was to pull the bar up to your shoulders and then try to use your legs and drive the bar overhead. And I was told to do that. So I barely get the bar to my shoulders and I'm like quivering and I try to get overhead and I hit myself in the head, hit myself in the shoulders and drop the bar. And the coach just shook his head and says, just get out of here. Like that was my first time in a gym. So I'm always telling people like it couldn't be much worse. And now we're at the point where it's super weird to say, but like setting world records, like just that consistency over time and having a halfway decent plan and not even great genetics, like you can accomplish in any realm way more than you do. So I'm really big on learning and putting it out there with Cannibal Fitness and everything as well. Language learning, reading books. So I'm on a, I'll tell you guys this before anybody else on social media knows, but I've had a low key goal of reading a book for every week this year, and I'm on track to read 52 books, and it's all obviously audiobooks. So I'm huge on learning and just being able to better yourself in a lot of different ways.
Oh, that's a great goal. That's awesome. Oh, that's great. Well, I mean, don't stop there. So I definitely want to take a moment to open it up to the rest of the family out here and see if anybody has any questions or comments.
I have a question.
Yeah, please.
Hello, Evan. Good evening. My name is Henry. My question is, when it comes to like public speaking or educating or letting people know what Elhan is, how do you plan that out or how do you approach that in order to make it more aware, to create more awareness?
To create more awareness specifically about LHON?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so it kind of depends on the crowd. So I always try to cater any of my speaking engagements to that specific crowd. So like here, I don't have to tell you guys, you know, what Libras is whatsoever. But with other people, I'll kind of cater how I'm talking about it. So if it's like doctors that I'm speaking to, I'll talk about how it's a degenerative mitochondrial disease, blah, blah, blah. And it has to do with complex one of the oxidative phosphorylation system of who cares, right? But then if I'm talking to other people in the blind community, I'm like, it just has to do with your optic nerve and it degrading everything. So then this is how it tends to manifest in the visual field. Now the people be like, oh, my disease does it, blah, blah, blah. And it kind of opens up a conversation with that transparency. And then for other people who have no earthly idea, like, hey, just kind of that connection point, the optic nerve gets really degraded on me. And it's led to this. So this is kind of how I see the world. And then I have different metaphors that I'll use as well. So I find that really helpful. I have a very bland one and then I have a Star Wars one. So the bland one is I ask someone, hey, have you ever passed out before? And a lot of people sadly have. So I'm like, okay, so I have blurs jump around all the time and everything. It's really confusing and nauseating, blah, blah, blah. But when it's a good day for me, when nutrition, sleep, you know, all those stressful factors are kind of lined up well for me, then it's like the second before you pass out. But on a bad day for me, it's like the moment before you pass out. They're like, oh, I get it. Okay, like the stars dancing around. It's like really, really throws you off. I'm like, yeah. And then there's a couple scenes from Return of the Jedi where Han Solo was, you know, frozen in carbonite and all that stuff. Hopefully people are still listening now. But he talks about like, oh, I think my vision is getting better. I did see a dark blur and now I see a light blur. And so anybody who remembers Return of the Jedi really well, that helps it get across really well. So again, just creating metaphors that help people to understand, because it's really hard unless you have lived experience to understand our visual impairment. And then catering how into the weeds I get medically, with the big words, basically, depends on what audience I'm speaking to.
Hey, thank you much, Evan. Appreciate it.
Of course. Thank you for your question.
I've been diagnosed for 12 years and I've never heard a Star Wars analogy, so I love that. That's great. What else we got? Who else has the question?
Yes, please.
Hey, this is Kevin. I'm curious. I have Elhan who kind of runs in the family. I'm curious if you have other family members who also have Elhan, or just kind of what were your parents kind of or family reaction or kind of response to you learning about Elhan, or how kind of family played a role in it all?
Yeah, good question. So I had an uncle who did not live a very healthy lifestyle, we'll say. So when I developed Leber's, then we were told, oh, this usually presents itself because of people abusing alcohol and drugs. And that's actually what we were told. Like, you guys are probably good. Your uncle has been doing some extra stuff for decades and decades. So probably just broke down his body so much to where he has this disease. And we're like, oh, okay. And then there was like a second or third cousin who developed it as well. And again, much later than typical. They were in their like late 40s and again, not a healthy lifestyle whatsoever. And we're like, okay, can't happen to us. That's what our parents told us. We're good. But then it popped up in me. It was actually like the day before my brother's birthday, and it was a weekend when I got back from the eye doctor, and I wasn't going to tell my family. I just drove home and put my truck keys away, and I was like, I'm done driving. I'm going to keep my mouth shut until we're done with my brother's birthday celebration. And then the eye doctor called and told my mom, kind of broke HIPAA in that way. So the family was really sad and had a grieving period, definitely longer than mine. But we grew up having to just adapt to anything. I grew up with the example of my mom basically shrugging off cancer a couple of times, like being treated on a Friday and then back to work on a Monday. It's hard to complain too much when you got that kind of toughness and just a compassionate person around you. So we just kind of went, okay, they're just like, we'll drive you to work and we'll figure this out. So for the most part, had a ton of support. As you heard throughout my story, I was living with different siblings at different times and then helping to get groceries here and there and, you know, stuff like that. And just these little adaptations that went a really long way. So hopefully that answers your question.
I have a question. This is Matt. Do you have any experience, you mentioned it briefly, like, and if other people have tested your blindness?
Oh, yeah. Gosh, with so many stories. I'm trying to think of, I'm sure you have some then, and some of them are like really messed up and some of them are just kind of funny. I'll try to give a mix. So one time I was at the bus station taking, I was doing public transport everywhere for my multiple different jobs in the Peoria, Illinois area. And there was one woman who must have been with her friend or something, because there was giggling coming from my right. But she came up about 12 foot in front of me, and I could see there was a blur there. You know, when you can like look off in your peripherals and tell better that there's something. So I was kind of like, you know, looking around, and I had learned to lean into the blind look, and let people maybe try to mess with me and like not let them understand how much I can see or how I can't, as kind of a defensive mechanism to like be ready to call them on it if necessary, because there was a lot of crazy people in that area. But this lady started like gyrating, like dancing, and then she would take a step closer and closer, and she got within like 4 feet of me just dancing until she lost her. So that was kind of a funny one. There was another one where I was at a gym in Chicago at the college gym, and a guy came up to me while I was squatting, and it was like 3 plates per side. And I'm a taller guy. I'm like 6'3", 6'4", like 250 pounds now. So I'm not small, and I need the rack pretty high. And this guy came up and he's like, hey man, we're going to share this rack. And so we're just going to unload all your weights, and we're going to move the bar down, 'cause I'm not tall enough for that. And then I'm going to put my weights on, and I'm going to do a set, and then we'll redo it. And I was like, no. He was like, what? Yeah, that's what's going to happen. Because that's what people in Chicago would do, is just like try to bully you. And I was like, no. I'm working out, and then once I'm done, then somebody else can use it. That's how this works. And he was just like mind blown. But he knew I was visually impaired, and then he started like just hovering near the rack, and then he started working his way slowly closer. And I knew he was there because I'd have to like move my gym bag closer to him and everything, get my stuff, and like so I knew he was still present and didn't like leave. And then he like started getting closer and closer. Luckily, my buddy was actually on the platform next to me, and this guy didn't know it. So my buddy goes, "Hey, he's using that rack, so you're gonna have to like leave." And the guy started whispering. He's like, "Yeah, I was just gonna see if he knew that I was still here." And I was like, "Yeah, dude, I know you've been standing here for 5 minutes. I was just letting you waste your time." And he's like, "Oh, okay," and just took off. So, yeah, you get tested a lot. I'm sure we can all talk some really.
I ask, and I guess just maybe this is rhetorical, but for everyone here, like, do you think blind people should go test sighted people and be like, "Hey, how good do you see?" And just like on a regular basis, you know, it's something I was listening to the other day, like a TikTok video. One of these conspiracy videos comes on, and the guy says, "What's the latest conspiracy?" The other guy says, "I think blind people are faking it." And then I thought of how people think Stevie Wonder fakes his blindness, and you know, it's just bizarre, you know, that people could think, you know, we're living these lives. For what? Like, faking what? Like, what are you faking? You know? This doesn't make any sense, you know? Yeah, thanks for that, though.
Yeah, absolutely. And to piggyback off of that, too, I mean, I've gotten that so many times. It's like, is he really blind, though? Just because they're, like, capable of doing something? They're like, "Oh, I thought all blind people saw total blackness." They think, "Oh, all blind people should just be, like, relegated to their home because you don't see them out very much. And, like, they should just kind of sit on the sidelines of life." So then when you actually do something or like outlift somebody or something like that, or just, I've gotten walking down the road and people are like, "That's amazing." You're like, actually one of my wife's bosses here in the Army, he was like, "I saw you guys like on a walk together. And I think that's just really great. You guys can do that." And I was like, "I want to slap this guy so bad." Like walking is not like the biggest accomplishment ever for us blind people. This is crazy. So yeah, thank you for bringing that up. That's certainly a hot topic that all of us need to build our capability and again prove to the rest of the world that like blind people aren't just supposed to just sit on the couch in the darkness and that's it.
Hello?
Yeah, go for it. We can hear you.
Oh, hey. Okay. Yeah, this is Jeremy. So it's in regards to speaking. When you're doing some public speaking, how do you keep yourself on track, and how do you know how long you've been speaking? So I've done one small engagement, and then I've been asked to do some others, and that's one thing that I've kind of been going over in my head is how to, you know, little tips you could possibly use to help out with those two things.
Yeah. Are you making it known that you're visually impaired during that talk, or are you trying to?
That's what it's about. Yeah.
Okay. So all you gotta do is be upfront about that. Be like, "Hey, once in a while, okay, so actually I should ask too, do you have some sight left? Like you can like look really close on your phone or zoom in or anything?"
No, it's voiceover.
Okay. So even then, you can just pop that up and be like, you start the talk with, "All right, guys, just so I'm not rambling and wasting your time here, or, you know, keeping you from your next adventure," or, you know, something silly like that at the beginning, to kind of break the ice. Be like, "Every once in a while to make sure I'm on track, and I'm not talking too fast or, you know, holding you guys after the bell would ring, I'm going to check my phone to make sure I'm doing good on time." That's all you got to do. It's like once you hit a natural like pause point in your talk, you can go, then you can just interrupt yourself, let's say 20-ish minutes in or whatever for like a 30-minute talk and be like, "All right, let me see how am I doing on time?" You hear it? Like, "All right, cool. So next." And then you keep rolling. And it's because you already put that out there, and then you get to dictate the pace yourself. You get to choose when you pause, double check, and be like, "Okay, great," and view it as a positive thing that you still have time, and then you know about when your stopping point is. So that's going to be how you can kind of keep track of that easily.
Thanks.
Of course. Good question. What else we got?
Evan Lorenzo from Connecticut. I've been affected about three and a half years now, and what I'm finding and when I'm visiting a couple of conventions, I just came from the NFB, National Federation of the Blind Convention, this past weekend in Connecticut. And I've heard this a lot, and I experienced this too, is when anything happens with sight and you're working or anything, is what questions, what do I ask for resources? And, you know, most people don't know what to ask for because they don't know what's going on. I'm finding doctors aren't aware. Ophthalmologists or neuro-ophthalmologists stuff, they're great. Got some great doctors in Connecticut. And I've been sharing a lot with them. And I've been trying to share with people, that, you know, ask right away. If you hear someone having a problem, ask for resources because they don't know how to help us. And we don't know the questions to ask. And then, you know, time flies by the time you do get some training, occupational therapists or anything else, you've lost your job or something else has happened. So that's one thing I've been, you know, trying to share. But how do we reach out? How do we get that out there?
That's a good question. I think living by a good example and being able to have more discussions like this in the blind community is very important to be able to set a good example. The more of us there are in the workforce, and so like any place that I've worked or had exposure to where it's like I use Zoom text in a larger monitor and I was good to go. Like I otherwise would maybe have to ask for some help here and there with some small things, or if I had to sign a signature, somebody point at the line for me, like those little minutia make that known, like, hey, maybe some little things will come up, but like for the most part, meat and potatoes wise, these two accommodations and I'm good to go. Like I can start rolling from there. Just know that I might have to ask for something else, but I'm not trying to be intrusive, but there might be some other small accommodations there. So by me doing that, they know that any other visually impaired person, if you know, they're kind of similar to my condition, would be able to do that job and understand at least a little bit what accommodations could be a good starter kit. So I think the more of us participating in the workplace and putting it out there, advocating for ourselves and then doing a good job, we'll just show others what is necessary.
Thank you.
Yeah, good question.
Evan, my name's Helen, and I missed the beginning of everything that you had said, but I want to tell you that I walked in and I have been in awe of you. And I'm just a little bit shocked because you said that perhaps maybe earlier in life you weren't kind of as much of an extrovert. Am I understanding that correctly?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I'm still very much an introvert in a lot of ways. It's just in order to serve my purpose, I need to be able to talk to people. So it's helped a lot. Like when I say I was kind of an introvert, like I had a big friend group and everything through college when I was still sighted. But I happened to actually live alone many times because my roommate would move after a semester or something like that, transfer to a frat house or something. And I found that that worked really well for me. But I realized once I was visually impaired and had to go to grad school and everything, I was like, I am terrified of everything and I'm trying to adapt to everything. Like the only way I'm going to be able to actually talk to people in my classes who can't see me or anything is I need to be a little bit of a bigger personality and put myself out there a little bit more. So I started doing that, being willing to talk, maybe have a silly comment here or there and just have fun with things. And once I did that and I didn't really care if people thought I was, you know, an idiot for, like one time I had a Star Wars shirt on in a presentation and you like made a silly acronym with Star Wars that had to do with my presentation about a research study. I didn't care if people thought it was silly. I was just like, I'm just going to put myself out there and like have fun and be able to, again, be more extroverted. And that allowed me to connect to people a lot more. So,
I think it's very important. By you doing that, that opens up a door for people to not be afraid to approach you, not be afraid to ask questions. I have two sons that are affected in different ways. My oldest son was born with multiple challenges and he's actually a public speaker. Huh? And I've always given him like super amazing kudos for everything that he's done. But I just think that some of the stuff that he's done, he hasn't actually vocalized, but the way that you have explained so many aspects of your life, you just make it, forgive me if I sound disrespectful or rude, I don't know. You just make it okay. And you make it okay for everyone around you. And that makes people feel that the door is open to ask questions. And I think that is so important. And I also want to say, this is only my second kind of meeting in this. And I'm trying to navigate for my youngest son who is dealing with all of the loss of his vision and stuff. And he's not ready yet to come and sit here and listen. I don't know I know he doesn't think he's going to get his sight back, but I just he literally came in and I said, oh, I'm late for this meeting. And he goes, just keep everything to yourself. I don't want to know about it. And I don't know how to break down that barrier to have a conversation with him. Do you have anything for me?
Yeah, so he's just going to be lost right now, which makes sense. He was used to a certain paradigm, and now it is completely shifted. So how old is he?
He's turning 28 tomorrow.
Okay, yeah, so, I mean, you're that age, or really any age, and all of a sudden how you thought your life was going to go is all of a sudden changed. Like me quitting driving, like people knew the name of my truck, would refer to my truck by name. They're like, that's Lil Red. That's like Evan's best friend. So having to give that up randomly on one day and just put my keys back and be like, okay, I'm done. I can never drive again. Was a big deal, but you learn to understand that was the step that had to be taken. But there's so much more that you can still do. I think it's going to be a struggle to figure out what he thought his purpose was and then how to now achieve his purpose given the current circumstances. But hopefully, he's willing to, maybe hear something about my story or somebody else's, that's going to kind of open things up. Again, I was a tiny little nerdy kid, just wanted to lift some weights and be a little bit stronger so he didn't get beat up in basketball or on the playground as much, to the world's strongest blind guy. So like, you can have such a giant shift in what you thought your purpose was or what you're going to be good at. Like I thought I was just gonna be good at reading and was pushed to be a physicist. And instead, here we are where I get to use physics to help people be healthier and happier. So he might have to have this transition and what he thinks his purpose is and how he's learning and accomplishing things, but as long as he's working on doing stuff, he's going to be able to find his way for sure.
I appreciate you very much, and the analogy with the gym is so huge because he was the fat kid at school that was teased, and they used to poke him and call him Pillsbury Doughboy and things like that, and he had started going to the gym, and I will very much be able to bring home what you shared with me or with us, about like, doesn't matter about pounds and things like that. Just like, do your numbers. I love that because he's, he finally, it's really frustrating for him because he said he got his life on track. He started eating healthy, doing exercise, everything like this. And then this happened. Mm-hmm. And he's like, it's my fault. I shouldn't have gone to the gym. Maybe it's because I went skiing. I'm like, it's not because you went skiing and it's not because you went to the gym. It's not, you know what I mean? But you go, I guess, I can't speak for everybody. Everybody looks for a reason that this happened to them, I think.
But bluntly, I think it's stupid to look. I'm blunt if anybody hasn't caught on yet. But I think it's stupid to look for a reason why it happened to you. It just is what it is. I'm very tautological in that way. Like this is your new circumstances. Yes. It's just like you can't be like, oh, I wish I was 6'3", but I'm only 5'9", or I wish I was 6'3", but I'm actually 6'7". Like you get the cards you're dealt. So keep playing. Like
I love it.
You only lose if you walk away from the table. So we all have our different capabilities and everything, and like if he wants to check out my YouTube channel, I have all kinds of stuff when it comes to accessing the gym, so he can still do that. I have stuff about healthy eating and some different easy accessible ways to make sure that works for fat loss or for bulking, and accessible tools that talk to you and make it so much easier in order to be able to still eat proper. So there's plenty of resources. It's not that much adaptation, and he can still, quote unquote, keep his life on track and still be able to have those accomplishments as well.
I adore you. Thank you so much.
This is recorded, so I don't know if we all have access.
Whenever you want to, once he's ready.
I appreciate you. Thank you. I will. Absolutely. I know he'll come to it, but I just don't know how to help him is all. So thank you. You've given me some hope here.
Of course. Happy to.
Sorry, real quick. This is recorded. This is Lorenzo again. This is recorded. Do we have access to this in case she wanted to see this or show her son later on?
Yeah, it'll get posted probably tomorrow, if not tomorrow, the next day. And it's I'll put it in the Facebook group attached to this particular event when it comes out. And then it's permanently findable on the UMDF website. And if you go to umdf.org/LHON, the first button has all the recordings from all of these calls, or most of them. And this one will be there in the next day or two. Yep.
Thank you.
Don't they do such a good job of this?
I've got a... Hi, it's Marjolaine. Do you hear me?
Yep.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, I was listening to you, and I was comparing that to my son. He's not an Ironman at all. But when he lost his eyesight at 18, he started going to bed quite late, not getting up as good hours and all that. So I contacted... He was always... doing sports, playing hockey and all that. So I contacted a gym, a small gym, and there was a trainer there, and he said, oh, bring him to me. I'll deal with him. Mm-hmm. And that's what we did. And like you say, it started with just doing a bit of this, a bit of that. And then the trainer said, don't you have a friend that would love to do a bit of testing with you? And so he brought in a friend, and it started like that. And then he says that, well, he was supposed to go to college for a certain job, and then it all came apart. So I think, like the lady was saying, is her son was already in the gym. If there's somebody or a friend, because my son is quite social. So a lot of his friends came up and said, because when it comes from us, from the mother, sometimes it's like, hey, what do you know? You know, that type of thing. So his friends were good enough to convince him that he could do it. And he went to the gym all through the summer. So just that, the fact getting up in the morning, going to that gym for about an hour, changed a whole day for him. And then his friends convinced him that he could go to university here downtown. And he started with three courses, and then he thought, oh, I can do this. But like you say, I had to push him to ask for the right to do this and the right to have an exam different ways, because he was not going to advocate for himself. He never had to before, so he didn't know how. Mm-hmm. So sometimes at one point I had to get in and say, hey, you know, and like you say, CNIB was not, which is Canadian for us, Canadian services were not really there for him. So I had to push quite a bit myself for the first few months. And then university, they had some services. But if you don't ask, you don't get them. So, but it was very good for him. And but I think the friendship that was there really convinced him that he could do things. And now it's been, he's 18, it's been 6 years, and he finished his master. He did an international master. He had to go to Vietnam for placement. He went to study to Spain, and now he's got a super job near Montreal. And I'm sure he wouldn't be ready, just like you, to go and talk about it. It's still something that, okay, well, I'm doing good. You don't need to talk about it. So I think it takes quite a while for the person to be able to just discuss this, because I think he would be really good at explaining the way he worked around it. But I don't think he's ready for that. But like I say, if he's in the gym, if he like going to the gym, maybe a friend would be good enough to convince him, hey, let's go together and then we'll work out something, as a schedule of some sort. I think that would help too. But the way you're speaking, it's really good. Everybody should hear your... So I'm glad it's going to be available, because everybody should hear your talk like that. Thank you so much for sharing.
Oh, definitely, Anne. No problem. Thank you so much for that point as well. I think friends are immensely helpful. And I've met some people just by being at the gym. You know, there's guys where we're best friends still. I was messaging him earlier today, and great support system. And I was in his wedding, and it was a guy who found me while I was trying to find 2.5-pound plates at the gym and asked if I needed help. And then we hit it off from there. So you make some very good points. Sorry, I cut somebody off.
Oh, no. Evan, to that point, can you remind us what age you were affected at and how long you've been affected?
Yeah, I was 22, and so it's been 10 years now, this month, actually.
Great, thank you.
I'm loving these questions. My favorite part of the talks.
I have a comment. This is Matt, about the previous, you know, friendship thing is, basically, maybe for the moms here, when, we meet other people who have been through this, and if they have success or they teach you some success, that's what might propel, you know, the affected patient forward. I know I met somebody in a living skills program, and they took me all around San Francisco and showed me all kinds of awesome things. And I'm like, oh, wow, blind people could do anything. You can do it. Anybody can do anything. You can work anywhere you want. You could be anything you want, except, you know, in those areas where they discriminate, like, you know, government, military things. But, you know, exclusionary areas. But honestly, you could do anything. So, like, it all comes down to standing in the right place. Maybe your sons are not standing in the right place. And when they're standing next to somebody who is influencing them with positive LHON behaviors, they will propel.
Very good point.
Yeah, this is
thank you, Matt.
Kevin, I'd like to add to kind of what Matt said. I think, I mean, it's really cool and great that some of the moms are kind of here, but I guess in kind of ways, Elhan, or kind of like most things, it's like you teach somebody to fish, or do you give them a fish type of thing, or what's the best way of helping somebody out is like figuring out how they can help themselves. So, I mean, I guess personally, like at times I've kind of view other moms with of kids or people who have LHON. I'm like, oh, that'd be great. Like my mom was that kind of concerned or caring or kind of that supportive and knew about this and that. But I'm like, in actuality, it's probably benefited me that I had to figure out my own, and there was like that language and cultural barrier stuff like that. So I guess, I mean, at least for me, I could think a lot of like my empowerment, liberation, and success and independence was as a result of like me having to figure it out myself, because not having like a mom that was able to was me being blind.
Any other questions? These are fantastic.
Hey, Evan. This is Megan from Jersey. So we share this all the time, but what is one of your favorite blind flubs or blind embarrassment moments?
Oh, gosh. What a great question. I wish I would have had time to prep for this one. There's like too many stories.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Roulette wheeling through my head. Okay, first one that came to mind was when I went to the hospital to get like my blood drawn for genetic testing and see the neuro-ophthalmologist and all that fun stuff. And you know, they're just like, oh, you're like someone from a textbook. Cool, whatever. So I came out on my my elbow pits, and still not using a cane, anything like that yet. But we had a Ford Flex at the time. So my mom went to go get the car, and I was like, you know, hot in the hospital. So I'm like, I'm going to wait outside. So I walk up this little cul-de-sac at the hospital, and like, there's a Ford Flex like right there. And I was like, oh, that's gotta be her. So, there was some noise, like radio or, like talking on the phone or something going on in the speakers of the car. And the curb was pretty raised. So the car was down even more, and I'm pretty tall. So I couldn't look in. I wouldn't been able to see who it was when I went in anyway, but I kept trying to open the passenger door, and they kept not letting me in. And so I tried to open it again. I'm just sitting there waiting, like, is she going to unlock the door or what's going on here? I got a call, and all of a sudden went silent. They just like turned everything down, and we're just like sitting there, just like maybe he'll go away. And in retrospect, all they saw was like, a decently large man with just bandages on his elbows, just standing there. And that's all they saw. They didn't see my head or anything. They just saw bandages and trying to break into their car. They're like, oh no. Until my mom from the other side of the cul-de-sac is like, Evan, I'm over here. Like, oh gosh. Okay. So it was probably 2 minutes of me trying to like, you know, Frankenstein my way into these people's car. But, so that was like a very early flub that stuck with me.
I think we all have them. So it's great to share them.
think we all have a story similar. So like we're all on mute, but we are all laughing, just as a heads up.
Okay, good. I'm not alone.
No. We are hitting that top of the hour. Any other questions that want to be on the recording? If not, I'll kind of walk us through November's calls.
Well, yeah, if there's no other questions, can I do my little spiel about Cain and Abel to make sure I'm thorough enough?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, so I know I talked about Cain and Abel Fitness and what I do, blah, 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 but I just want to make sure that it can be helpful to anybody. I didn't talk completely about all the different things I do because there's so many times where I'll be doing a task that has to do with Cain and Abel. I'm like, oh, yeah, this is part of things as well. So basically, again, it's a fitness exercise, but also a learning and health resource for us with visual impairments in general, not just with LHON. But I have 50-something different articles completely free on my website. It's just canenablefitness.com. You can also sign up for remote training, which is a very cheap option because I'm sympathetic to the fact that us with disabilities don't get to make as much money a lot of times, which is a sad trend, but I play into that by trying to be affordable. But then there's also some one-time purchase things that you can get on the store there's a grip program called Get a Grip with the Blind Strength Coach. There's also Upright, which is a fall prevention program that's aimed a little bit more towards older people. But all of us with visual impairments do have issues with tripping and falling and making sure that we're able to be durable enough and also be able to catch ourselves and have better balance and all that fun stuff. So that's what those programs are aimed towards. And then I also have a ton of stuff on social media. So I appreciate everybody being able to go subscribe on YouTube and then follow on Instagram. It's just Cain and Abel Fitness on both. And I put out a ton of content in a lot of different ways. I already talked about like learning aspects. I have a series called Blind Book Club and then a ton of exercise tips, different highlights of me trying to be, live as a good example, nutrition things. There's also even some of the more simple things that a lot of sighted people will look over or can access a lot easier. Like, there's a muscle function series where I describe where a muscle is on the body instead of just saying, oh, the quads, this is what you do. I actually detail where they are in the body, what they do, and then what exercises there are to work those. So there's different series like that. So, there's a lot of different ways I'm trying to, shore up some of the different gaps, in the blind community. And again, also those 50 something articles will probably cover anything and everything, at this point. So feel free to go through that. And then of course you can email me at canenablefitness@gmail.com. Shoot me a little reminder that you were in this live. And I would love to have further discourse.
Sorry, awesome. Could you repeat where to get your information? I would write it down.
Yes, it's at canenablefitness.com, canenablefitness.com. And then you can also go to our Instagram and YouTube channels, which are the same thing, canenablefitness.
Thank you very much.
Of course.
Love that. Thanks, Evan. Any last questions for Evan?
No one Wonderful. Asked the whole time how much I bench press. Thank you so much. I hate that question.
Wait, now we want to know. Now we want to know.
No, it's not very good. I got really off arms. So everybody's like, oh, what do you bench? I'm like, I don't. I'll strongman overhead. I don't know. So I really appreciate the whole group for not asking the most questions.
Oh, all right. Evan, thank you so much. It was so great to meet you. So glad you're a part of our community. Please come join us more often. We want to hear more about it, and it's such a great resource to be able to get to know fitness. I definitely want you to check out all the different muscle groups and know where they are because I don't know those at all. But thank you so much. Your story honestly just lightened the room. So thank you so much for sharing all that. And don't be a stranger. We'd love to see more.
Yes, very happy to be a part of this community. Thank you so much for having me. And it looks like I should be able to be at the conference in St. Louis. So hoping to meet a lot of you guys there.
Awesome. That's wonderful. All right. Well, before I turn off the recording, I do want to kind of talk through. We have some more calls that are coming up for the rest of the month. So I wanted to kind of talk about those quick, and then we'll get that recording turned off. All right. So the next call coming up is on Monday, November 11th, and that is the D.C. area community call, and that is at 8 p.m. Eastern, as always. Next call after that is the Parenting with LHON, And that call is on Tuesday, November 12th at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern. And this is a newer call. This is the second time we've had this call this year. So definitely check it out. This will be the last time we have this call this year, given it's November. And this is really a call open to anyone, parents, if you're a parent, like figure to somebody in somebody's life, grandparents, like thinking about becoming a parent, like all of, in whatever is in that realm, you are welcome to this call. So it's very open and it's a really good resource. So highly recommend that. Next call is on Wednesday, November 13th, and that's at 5 p.m. Pacific, and that is navigating employment. Next call is LHON Plus, and that is on Saturday, November 16th at 9 a.m. Pacific. A little bit different for a Saturday call, so just keep that in mind. Next call is Moms of LHON Affected Kids, and kids in parentheses, kids of all ages. And that is Wednesday, November 20th at 5 p.m. Pacific. And that is a wrap for November. Most of all, to United States Americans, want to wish everyone a happy Thanksgiving, and holiday season is approaching. We have a great call lined up for December. We're calling it Jessica Maria's favorite things. So we'll talk through holidays, gift giving, gift ideas. And so yeah, definitely come for that. It'll be super fun. You probably have met Maria Johnson. Maria is the one that chairs the conference, and we have a blast together, and she's one of the OG hosts. So it'll be a blast to kind of bring the band back together. So please join us. But most importantly, Evan, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for joining us. Loved hearing your story. And yeah, we look forward to seeing you at our conference. But Lissa, if you don't mind turning off the recording, that'd be wonderful.